Good morning, Anne. Good morning, Alice. Thank you for joining us for coffee this morning.
Good
Thank you for
morning.
we're here talking about the new book. Well, new-ish. It came out in October. Do you guys want to tell us a little bit about this one? I know you guys have collaborated on many books before.
And you should start first.
I'll start and just let people know that it's a bilingual book. And unlike some of our other bilingual books that are kind of tome-like, they're big, heavy books. University of Alaska Press printed this one. It's really a lovely book because the Yupik is there, the Yupik in English, side by side, but they're lined up on the pages. So each page includes the Yupik and the English side by side. And it's just a lovely, a very readable presentation of the stories. And really, what the book is just a book of stories divided up by the different regions: Chanina, Kaluyak, Lower Yukon, Akulimute stories, Middle Kuskokwim. And I think for me, the thing that makes it most special is these are stories that Alice and I and Marie Mead and others, we recorded them in the early 2000s. People like Frank Andrew and Paul John. And those men and the men and women, Johnny Thompson from St. Mary's, and the men and women that told the stories, many of them had seen those Angashkut. They had seen the people they were talking about. So we didn't have the opportunity to talk to Angashkut shamans, but we talked to men and women who saw them perform and could describe that, or they were sharing stories that they'd heard in the Qazigi in the homes for a long time. So they're old stories, but then some of them are new. And even we have some of the photos of those Angashkuk that were taken in the 30s and the 20s and 30s. And that really is the last generation of men and women that heard those things. So you have an opportunity to hear them with your mind in the book, these last remembrances of very important people. Because shamans did so much. Alice can share more.
Yeah, it was a really good book. We've had a lot of topic specific gatherings for Jalista Education and Culture and Jalista Elders Council before, where we bring elders together and talk to them about a certain topic, but we never did one on shamans and Angashgut because it was kind of like a taboo subject where when we were having a gathering, we would end up talking about it for some reason, or stories would come up and elders would tell them. And we never really kind of purposefully discussed or asked elders questions about it, but they would tell stories about it. And I remember when we brought them to the Yupik Pitjegerait Cultural Center. We brought about five elders there, and Joan Hamilton was the director of the museum then. And we were showing them objects, Yupik objects, and one of them was a shaman object. And that brought up a beautiful discussion. I mean, it was just very rich discussion from our elders about shamans and shamanism in general. And that was in the 2000s, I believe, when we brought elders to museums and showed them some of the collections and some of the objects. And that kind of brought up a lot of memories from our elders, including Frank Andrew. Do you remember who else was there? And Marie talked for a bit too. And so that discussion, even Paul John also. But growing up, we did hear a lot about shamans, but in a negative way, sort of, that they were that they would kind of attack people in their dreams, or it was just in a very negative way. So to hear shamans that they did good works like healing and help communities with providing for certain resources or animals with mass dancing was a really amazing thing with when I did the transcriptions and translations of those tapes and also of the older tapes that Anne had recorded.
That's amazing. And to think you guys started collecting these stories in the early 2000s,
Yeah, and
it's
some of them are from before that. Marie
wow.
made recordings in the 1990s when we were getting ready to do the mask exhibit. And again, the shamans were critical in the mask dancing, and the mask dancing was there to request future abundance. So it was a very positive thing. And I do remember one story is that we had a group leading, guiding that mask exhibit and guiding what we were doing. And when they named the exhibit, they were the ones that chose Agayuli Yarachput, our way of making prayer, because Agayu was that originally meant shamans using masks to request an abundance. When they made that suggestion, I thought that was a bad idea, that the juxtaposition with prayer would really alienate people, devout Christians today. But I was completely wrong. They knew what they were doing because it made that very important, very positive connection. And we had several people, one or two, but everybody else, when the masks returned to Tuksuk, and when the masks returned to Bethel, that they were glad to see those return, and to they appreciated what they meant. Yeah, it was Alex Bird, actually, I think, that from Kotlik, if I have, or maybe from Peace, from Imala, I'm sorry, I don't remember who was he, and Margaret Andrews with Frank Andrew were the ones that commented on that object in the museum. And what they said was, Marie was saying, "Do you feel comfortable sharing this picture, sharing this information with people everywhere?" And they said, "It needs to be known, but we need to be careful. We need to take our time and ask questions, and you need to know more." So that was, again, that was kind of where we started. But Alice hit the nail on the head. We didn't do this on purpose. They just, like Ichtenrat stories, it's something people enjoyed sharing. And another story, we got stuck in Washington, D.C. This is with Frank Andrew. Alice just told this story to somebody recently. We went there to work in museums. Alice was there with us and Marie. And then Alice had to go home early for her kids. But we stayed an extra day and then ended up there for another 3 days stuck in the snow. They had a blizzard that put a whole inch of snow on Washington and the city shut down. But we were stuck in our hotel room. There weren't even restaurants to go to. Guess what they did? They told stories. And Frank, I called them the blizzard tapes. And Alice had to transcribe and translate them all. So she knows these stories. And one of my favorite stories in the book about Dayichdak, the shaman from Urachamut, just above Kalskag, who healed a sick girl in around Russian Mission, traveled over there, was brought over to heal someone. All his adventures are, Frank told them in, it takes pages of detail about Dayichdak, that shaman that he heard about when he was young.
How do you go about asking people to tell you these stories? You have many books. The Ichtenhot one is actually sitting right next to me on my desk. And the stories in them are great, and it sounds like this is a collection of stories. When you approach an elder, or it sounds like they're willing just to tell the story, how do you make sure that they're comfortable in telling these things that might have at one point seem a little bit more, like you were saying, Alice, that the shamans would seem were came off as negative at some point. How do you have those conversations?
I think that having a real genuine interest in the topic itself and being very open about it, and having, not being so closed-minded or not being judgmental, but just listening to the stories, because they are, like Anne said, the elders who told them are people who were healed by shamans, who saw shaman incantations or performances in the Qazvi. They heard stories about them. They also, witnessed them. They were never shamans themselves, that because I think we missed that generation of active shamans and shamanism who were willing to kind of share their crafts and or their gifts or their the way they did things. So I think they were the generation of elders that we caught, and the stories that they told, they really were amazed by them and their ability, and they're very real. John Philip Sr. from Kong Gangrenok talked about how he was healed, his eye was healed by the shaman Buyuk, and I remember him telling that story in front of me, and it was just amazing to me how he could be very ill in one, just one moment, and then the next shaman comes to heal his eye, and then when he's done, he wakes up the next thing and he's perfectly healed. And so to me, and then even some of Elsie Tommy's stories about how healers did their work was just amazing to me, because and then the elders started saying how, God gave them these abilities to heal people, to help people, because they were very useful and needed in the community at their time. And then some elders were saying there are some people who still have these abilities in our community, but they're just not practicing them. So it's really, I feel like we, as long as you're very, give elders an opportunity to speak to you about any topic, and then are very, open to what they have to share and have belief in what they have to share. They're really willing to share stories with us or any advice or anything that will help us in general.
But they're not all shaman stories are told, so this is a good selection. There are more, and they are being told to this day. So just the other day, I heard one that was just amazed me. And they are being told in, at tables, in restaurants, in makiwiks, in steam baths. When people get together, they'll tell stories. And that is not, I just want to remind everybody, this book is not a complete picture of what shamans and shamanism is. It's just sharing some stories that we've heard. And there are so many others. It is a living tradition. And it doesn't surprise me when I hear them, because we still hear so many stories, and I heard them growing up of other shaman, and I tell them too. I tell these stories, and I think the best part about it is that they encourage conversation. People will read them and then they'll remember a story and then they'll tell it. And so with the podcast too, we're hoping it'll encourage other people to share their stories and continue the tradition of sharing this knowledge of our history and culture to other people.
What is the process like when you are writing a book like this, when you're starting to collect stories over 30 years ago to October of 2025 and finally putting everything in a book? What is that process like for you guys?
I can say one thing, because we didn't really start or think about a book until COVID, and that happened with the Ichtenrat book too. We were stuck. We couldn't work with living elders, so we would go back and read some of the old stories. And when you start, and actually it was a topic that Mark John suggested. He said people are really interested in these stories. We should make a book of these stories. That was what he did. Mark would give an idea, and then we were the worker bees. And then we could go and look for, you just look and try to remember. And when you start looking, you see that there's hundreds. Same thing with the Ichtenrat stories. There were so many, and we never had a gathering on Ichtenrat. They just popped up in lots of activities. So, and it's very fun to then look around and see what you have and then bring them together. And I found in both books, I think Alice and I agreed that doing them, organizing them by the regions, not putting all the healers together and the, not organizing them by topic, but people really want to know what people in their part of the world did. So that's the way we've organized the stories. They remember those particular people, and I think they'll maybe read all of the stories, but they'll go to the Nelson, a Nelson Islander would like to, somebody from Nunavik would want to go to the ones from his or her hometown. first. So that's the way we put them together.
I think we might be coming up on time, but before I let you guys go, is there anything else that you wanted to add? And also, if someone is out there looking for this book, where can they find it?
If they're looking for the book, they can go to the Jalista Education and Culture website. There's a tab on our books, and it is on there, and it'll bring you to the press that sells it. Or if you want to come into our offices here in Anchorage, we are located on the first floor of Jalista Corporation Building. On the side, on one side is shareholder records, and we're on the other side, and we sell books from here also. And then other places throughout the community that sell them are Tidal Wave Books, and I believe the Anchorage Museum also carries them. So there are a few places here in town, but yeah.
Is there anything else that you guys wanted to add about shamans or about your experience writing this book?
I think that shamans will continue to be a topic that people tell stories about, and and I think that we really, even though it was kind of a little bit of a taboo topic to begin with, that people hardly hear about and didn't really want to talk about, I think opening up the discussion will have more people sharing their experiences with shamans. So that's my, and then hopefully we'll have, other things, other topics also come about as a result of shamans too. And I really enjoy working with our whole team, Anne, and of course Mark when he was with us. And then Marie Mead also. I was hoping Marie would have joined us, and maybe next time we'll have her with us too. So I really am thankful that Marie, especially, was the one who oftentimes was really good at asking questions. So I have to acknowledge Marie, the facilitation she did with the elders, and the great work she did on the mask exhibit, kind of bringing out those stories, kind of led us to where we are here now. And of course, Anne. So I want to acknowledge her too.
Yeah, Marie is a wonderful listener. She does. She brings,
We'll get her on
yeah.
next time. Well, thank you guys again so much for coming on, and it was a long time coming, so appreciate the patience, and I'm excited to get a hold of the new book and give it a read.